Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, for undivided we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can't rely on it.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. Interesting day in New Jersey. Evidently, all of this talk about sanity on the gun issue has rubbed off in the state of New Jersey, where their General Assembly has passed six pieces of legislation. One that would require the seizure of firearms when a mental health professional says this person poses a threat. Another requiring background checks on private gun sales. Another lowering the maximum capacity for magazines from 15 down to 10, I guess with an exception for a 22 caliber rifle. Also a bill that requires a justifiable need for a carry permit, which I think that's important. Then maybe you don't have an idiot in the diner dropping his gun on the floor while I'm trying to have eggs. And also another one that prohibits body armor piercing ammunition. And the sixth bill establishing an extreme risk protection order, basically saying if the court determines that someone's in danger, like spousal abuse, one of those kind of boyfriend abuse or girlfriend, who knows, they take them away. It seems sane, seems logical. Thank goodness for New Jersey. But here to talk a little bit about, this and also the intimidation tactics that are now being employed by the gun folks. I've asked Ben Jackson to come talk with us. Ben is the fantastic blogger at the Dad of the Decade, also one of the No NRA folks. Ben, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, I'm so glad to be back here. Thanks for having me.
So good on New Jersey, right?
Yeah, it's actually been a good day in a few places. So New Jersey passed six bills that are going to make a huge difference. They're going to save lives. And Governor Murphy in New Jersey has indicated he'll sign those next Wednesday, so those will become law very soon, and that will make New Jersey one of the states with the strictest gun laws in the nation, which is important because we can actually look at the states that have strict gun laws even when they have other factors that may lead to gun violence, and they have dramatically lower gun deaths than states that don't. Here in my state of Massachusetts, we also passed an ERPO today, which is the Extreme Risk Protection Order, and Delaware passed a bump stock ban today through their Senate, too. So we've made some good gains here today. And each of those laws are going to make a difference. They are going to save lives. These ERPO laws especially, I think, are really important. I was talking to a couple friends of mine, one of them Fred Guttenberg, whose daughter Jamie was killed in Parkland, and another Curry Penny Baker, who years ago, his mom Joyce, committed suicide by gun. Both of these women could have been saved by one of these ERPO laws, that if somebody near them said, hey, there is a problem, somebody near the person with the gun, in one case Curry's mother, in the other case the shooter in Parkland, and went to police, there would be a mechanism to confiscate those guns at that moment of danger. And it's so important. It's something that would make all of the difference for so many people. And we're seeing these laws take off, so it's a really good day.
What do you say to the person, though? Because I get this from folks who, you're just beating up on people with mental health issues, and it's going to cause even more of a stigma for people with mental health issues. What do you say to that?
So I would say that mental health is critically important, but part of the ability to treat mental health and the ability to treat these people with dignity is to give them a chance to receive this treatment. And if this person is an imminent danger to them, we need to be able to take away the mechanism of harm, including self-harm. And in this case, when you look at specifically suicide, most people who commit suicide by gun, who attempt suicide by gun, are successful. A large majority of people who commit suicide by other methods are saved. And 90% of people who survive a suicide attempt go on to die by something other than suicide. So this is a life-saving measure for people with mental illness. And I 100% agree that we need to be treating people with mental illness with dignity and with respect, and this is just one part of solving this problem. we also certainly need to be investing in Medicaid and mental health services and access to mental health for communities that don't have good access for this, and mental health parity in insurance. And all of these things are a critical piece of the puzzle. But each piece that we put in gets us closer to being finished. And this is something that, while it's imperfect, it saves lives. And at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. But I certainly agree with you that we need to do more for those folks who suffer with mental illness.
Yeah, I mean, on all sides of the equation. And, you know, in bringing up the idea of people with mental health, because I don't know how you do something like this. You know, we saw the story yesterday about, you know, someone, you know, called the SWAT team to come to David Hogue's home, claiming that there was a shooter on the premises. And it's one of those things where you go, you know, the intent was, you know, to send a message, to intimidate, to harass. And I would have to argue that, you know, maybe even try to get this kid and his family killed.
Yeah. And this is something that we're seeing more and more. And it's terrifying. It's a tactic that has killed people in the past. People have been killed by, it's called swatting, where you call and have a SWAT team show up. It endangers people in the home. It endangers their neighbors. It endangers law enforcement. It's a disgusting process, practice that really, I think, is born out of the InfoWars culture, right, where you have people who have an agenda with no morals and no tie to the truth. And when reality ceases to be something that's a measure for you to promote your agenda, it allows you a lot of freedom to do some really terrible things. And the NRA embraces this. You know, if you look at what the NRA TV folks in particular have done to these Parkland kids, you know, they have gone so far as to call them as part of socialist traitors, basically, that they're communists who are trying to destroy America. And when you have a segment of the population who is bought into this InfoWars culture, they actually then see these kids as threats to their country and do what they can't do. They actually justify to themselves these actions. And it's, you know, since we started NORA, it's opened my eyes to the level of hate that is out there.
Yep.
And it's dangerous and it's deadly. And if the NRA had any degree of responsibility, they would be aggressively condemning this. As far as I can tell, they haven't said a word about what happened to David Hogue and his family. And luckily, to be clear, they were safe. They were out of town at the time. Their home was damaged, but they are okay, which is great news, but beside the point, because at some point, this is going to kill another person.
No, absolutely. Because, you know, I was talking about this yesterday with Red T Raccoon, and, you know, I was saying, look, you know, who knows what you do when a no-knock raid comes and kicks in your door? How do you know what happens if you're holding the remote control? I mean, you know, it's a situation, it's a scary situation. I want to put nobody in on either side of the equation. And whoever set it up, whoever was responsible for it, there needs to be some serious draconian measures as punishment for these kind of people. Because these, in my view, it's almost attempted murder.
For sure. And you know, we've seen Congresswoman Clark out of Massachusetts has attempted to address this a number of times. I think that should we see a change in Congress, we'll see some legislation come through that will make this a substantially more penalized crime. Because you're right, it is an attempt to, in some instances, it's an attempt to kill people. It's an attempt to endanger law enforcement. It's a use of public resources that endangers other people. You know, if you roll out the SWAT team for something that's not there and there is a legitimate situation across town and somebody dies because of it, that's a victim of the swatting just as much as the folks who are having their door kicked in. And, you know, they click in a house that somebody maybe does have a gun and somebody comes in the door and gets shot. You're going to kill law enforcement this way. There's just no winner in this. And I have not seen anybody on the side that is perpetuating the behavior that creates this condemning it in any meaningful way.
Yeah,
and that to me is really reprehensible.
Yeah, it just seems to me that they're ramping it up. And, you know, I had seen a tweet that went out. You know, I'm sure you've seen the girl from Kent State with the gun and the little dress. She was promoting her appearance on on NRA TV and challenged this David Hogue to arm wrestle over the fate of the Second Amendment. And my thought is this what it's come to? I mean, really, yeah. is this kind of nonsense? Is this where we are as a country?
Yeah, and you know, luckily, I don't think David is bothered by appearances on little propaganda vlogs, right? Like, he's fine to not show up on NRA TV. But yeah, it is that. It is that mindset of, like, you know, you hear this term toxic masculinity a lot, of this, like, aggressive, I'm going to challenge you to a physical fight. I'm more than you for my physicality. My gun makes me stronger.
But your gun doesn't make you stronger.
No,
look, I grew up in a time where, you know, two guys got had a beef. They went out back. They slapped each other around a little bit. You know, they licked their wounds, and then the next day they were talking about sports or something else. Gun culture idea to me, you know, these guys with these guns who need the feeling, like you're pointing out, of this masculinity that, you know, maybe they don't want to go through the smacking around each other process. I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the day, something's got to happen. Because I've often said, and you can disagree with me, that, you know, society started going, you know, downward when little boys stop smacking each other around in the playgrounds. Because you learned how to deal with people, you learned how to interact, and you learned how to deal with bullies and all of this stuff instead of, you know, internalizing, and then, oh, I'm going to go to Grandpa's arsenal and go shoot a bunch of people.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we're in a weird spot right now where we've never been in history, where basically everybody has a microphone. And that microphone is amplified to people you're never going to see face-to-face, right? So it gives you the ability to say things that most people would probably never say to the face of somebody around, because at one point they were going to get smacked around for it, right? Or there were going to be other social consequences for them that affected them in their real life, which doesn't translate into an internet life. That's part A. And then part B is that this gun culture that comes around with it is purely based in fear, right? That this need to have these guns because the other out there is dangerous to me, whether it's the government I need to protect myself from this alleged tyranny that they are whatever is going to take down a drone, right?
Yeah, we need to water the tree of liberty with the blood of patriots and tyrants, Ben!
Exactly. So you have that fear. You have the fear of, and they stoke this racial fear a lot when you hear them talking about Chicago, they'll talk about thugs and gangbangers, but when they talk about somebody getting shot in Kansas, or in Nashville, it's a mentally deranged white person, right? So you have this racial fear that's of it. You have this fear of gun grabbers they talk about. And, you know, I don't really know anybody in the gun violence prevention movement who's saying, we want to come and take your guns. What we're saying is we want to be safe from your guns. And those are two very, very different conversations. But they, you know, they use these myths to stoke this fear, and this fear sells guns, which is why they do it. But when you combine it with the ability to be completely anonymous in your hate, it creates this really, really toxic culture that is fear-based and hate-based and without actual in-life social ramifications for the people who are doing it, and it's a deadly mix.
No, I'm right there with you. So what do we do? I mean, I look at what New Jersey did, and as you said, you've ticked off a couple of places that are moving in the right direction. There's part of me also that thinks that, you know, the gun nuts, and look, I've often believed that, you know, the people who want a gun should probably go through some mental health screening to begin with, especially if you've got small kids in your household. But that's a whole other argument for another day. You know, where's the path forward on this?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing we need to say is that most gun owners are not these people, that the NRA is not representative of gun owners. It is representative of gun sellers. And those are two very different things. And I think what we need to do is to break the power of the NRA's money over policy and over culture. And part of the way we do that is that we elect candidates who don't take NRA money, which allows us to enact sensible laws that will protect people. And then when people say these laws are effective and actually don't really take anybody's guns away from them, except for people who are actually killing them, you will find that it's not the end of the world. And I think that will allow for a more civil public discourse in the government around guns. But I also think when were able to break the financial back of the NRA, they will be forced to change their tactics as well. When they find out that what they're doing doesn't work, they won't continue to do it. So we really need to be looking at, where does the NRA get its money? How do the gun manufacturers get its money? Because it's not a membership organization in any meaningful way.
Right.
It's, you know, their money's coming from gun manufacturers. And so how do we stop that?
And maybe even, who knows, Russian oligarchs. If the stories I hear are true.
Yeah, no, we're seeing more and more evidence of that, that there is a deep Russian tie with the NRA, between the NRA and the Trump campaign. And it goes deeper than what is what they're claiming of, you know, a few thousand dollars in money. You know, you look at the Trump Jr. meeting in the 2016 NRA convention in Louisville, and with the Russians, and you know, there's a history there that points to something sinister. And I suspect when all the dust is settled here, we'll have a much fuller picture that is going to look pretty bad for our comrades over at the NRA.
Well, that is the hope, and the hope is that we continue to move forward and continue to find some sense in all of this. Ben, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing some thoughts. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Rick. Always glad to talk to you.
I'd love to talk to you again real soon, Ben Jackson. You might want to follow him on Twitter. Does some fantastic, fantastic work. Dad of the Decade is his handle. Also, you can follow them, the No NRA group at NoRA4USA. Good stuff there as well. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.